Children are often embarrassed by a parent who is in any way different from other kids' parents. So what do you do if you grow up with a schizophrenic mother? Michael Mack turned his experience into a one-man show called Hearing Voices, Speaking in Tongues. He'll tell us about the show and his mother's schizophrenia on Commonwealth Journal.
I'm interested in that intersection between the clinical diagnosis and the mystical experience.
That's all ahead on Commonwealth Journal, produced by WUMB Radio, with support provided by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. I'm Barbara Neely. There's an adage that says when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. But how do you do that if your metaphorical lemon is a schizophrenic mother? What many such children do is spend the rest of their lives in search of ways to heal themselves. Michael Mack has used his experience as the child of a schizophrenic to create a one-man show called Hearing Voices, Speaking in Tongues. The show's been described in such places as the Washington Post and the Boston Globe as transcendent art and unblinkingly honest, and Michael Mack's performance as breathtaking. He's an MIT graduate who went there planning to get a business degree until poetry grabbed him by the heart and plopped him down in creative writing. It is fascinating to me that you have taken what had to be some serious pain in your growing up, you know, and turned it into art. Now, I understand from some of the reviews that I've read that, you know, this has become a kind of healing experience for lots of folks who've had schizophrenia in the family. Is this an outcome that you anticipated?
Not at all. It all began as kind of a happy accident. I was a student at MIT. I was studying at the Sloan School of Business. I was expecting to go into management science, go into the corporate world somewhere, and I took a poetry class for elective credit. I figured I needed an easy A. So I took that class, and very soon on, I found myself writing about my mother and writing about our early experiences together. And as you said, it grabbed me by the heart.
Had you not written anything about it before? I mean, not even a journal or any of that kind of stuff?
Nothing. Nothing like that. I mean, I had made, in earlier years, as a teenager, I did a little bit of songwriting, but I had never touched that subject. And it really wasn't until I had the encouragement of some wonderful teachers and a venue like a poetry class to give that a shot.
I think I read that you had some pretty high-profile mentors while you were there.
I did, very much. I mean, a lot of people don't think of MIT and think about a writing program, but they've got a strong program, and I had the great fortune of being mentored by Maxine Cumin, New Hampshire poet, Pulitzer Prize winner, and she was there for a year, and we formed a pretty close bond. I went up to her farm from time to time and would visit her, but she saw something in me that I didn't quite see myself. And so it was through her and through a couple of other mentors I had. MIT has a cross-registration program with Harvard and with Wellesley.
I see.
So I, again, great fortune, had the chance to study with Seamus Heaney over at Harvard, Frank Bedard over at Wellesley, and I felt like, for an MIT guy, I got a pretty good education in poetry.
Well, you know, I mean, it's really fascinating the role that luck plays in this. I mean, if you hadn't taken the poetry class, I mean, you might be a CEO of some cutthroat corporation by now.
Life has a lot of twists and turns in it.
Fortunately.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, tell me, how did your mother's schizophrenia manifest itself?
In a pretty dramatic way, actually. She had just given birth to my baby sister, her fourth child, was still in the hospital a couple of days after giving birth, after delivery, and she became convinced that her physician was Jesus Christ. It passed. She was given a diagnosis of postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, not uncommon. Not uncommon. Everything seemed fine for about 6 weeks or so. And then my father tells the story about coming home from Safeway. He had been grocery shopping, had a couple of bags of groceries under his arms, came home and found her on the stairs crying uncontrollably. And he asked, well, what's wrong? What's happened, Annie? And she looked at him and asked, has my face changed? He didn't know what she was talking about. He asked again, what's wrong? What do you mean, has your face changed? And she said, am I the Blessed Virgin?
Mm.
And my father says that the hair stood up on the back of his neck. And that was really the very dramatic beginning to what was a pretty dramatic life, both for myself growing up and certainly for my mother.
I wonder, you know, as a child, I mean, this was, well, you were what, 5 or 6?
I was 5, yeah.
Like that. So this was the experience pretty much of your whole childhood, though I know your mother was hospitalized at various points. You know, what sort of carapace did you have to develop? I mean, children do not like for their parents to be different from other people's parents. I mean, you don't even want your mother to have short hair if everybody's mother has long hair. So this is a real fissure in your life. I mean, as a child, what did you do with it? How did you manage it? What did you tell your friends? What sort of story did you tell yourself?
Well, I could answer that question with a very short poem.
About a
1-minute poem that speaks directly to that. The name of the poem is Our Lady of Sorrows. Why did my mother chop off her hair? Why? Why did she follow me to the school bus stop that morning in second grade? I don't know. Or why she bent down sobbing, wouldn't let go of my hand. How long did we stand there by that 7-Eleven? Other kids hushed, watching. When the bus clunked to a stop, I climbed on first, grabbed a seat in back. My mother outside, hands curled on my window, her face a blur when the bus jerked away. The kid beside me punched my arm. Who is that man? Who is that man with you, crying so hard? I said, I don't know. 3 times I swore. I don't know him.
My guest on Commonwealth Journal is Michael Mack. When did you become comfortable enough with your mother's illness to tell people about it?
Really? Only in the writing class.
Really?
Yeah. For the years, none of us talked about it. Even inside the family, we didn't talk about it that much.
What did you tell people when they asked you, where's your mom?
I might say she's in the hospital. I might say that she hasn't been feeling well. I might say that she's gone on a trip.
Mm-hmm.
But the stigma around mental illness, especially schizophrenia, was so powerful that people just didn't talk about it.
So no adult ever sat you down, you know, when you were 10 or 12 or whatever and said, you know, Michael, let me explain to you exactly what's up with your mom.
My father did.
Okay.
And we're real grateful for that.
Yeah.
But outside of the family, no. There was nothing like counseling at school. There was nothing like the support groups that are available not only for parents and spouses of people with mental illness, but also children, which has been one of the wonderful developments in the past couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing like that. And so my father, virtually single-handedly, with the occasional help from the psychiatrists, he did the best he could.
Sure.
But what a difference it would have made if an organization like the National Alliance on Mental Illness was around then. We could have had people to talk to, people who are in the very same boat. And that's an organization. Here's my plug for NAMI, which is it's just a tremendously helpful and powerful organization. It's the first nationwide grassroots organization devoted to helping people with schizophrenia, people with mental illness, and their families,
mm-hmm.
finding ways to cope and providing advocacy.
You've been doing this long enough to have some sense of how attitudes have changed, if in fact they have changed, about schizophrenia. I mean, is it as stigmatized as it was 20 years ago?
Well, they have and they haven't at the same time. There has definitely been some very positive progress. And I think one of the indications of that are events in the public such as A Beautiful Mind, the movie with Russell Crowe. Here, for the first time, is a protagonist, a lead character who has schizophrenia, and he is essentially the hero of the movie. And prior to that, certainly there was no blockbuster with that kind of clout, that kind of widespread dissemination. So definitely there have been changes, and it's been through the efforts of efforts through the arts like that, in a small way through my own thing, and also through organizations like NAMI.
Right.
But at the same time, there's still a lot of stigma around it. And in fact, there was somebody who came to my show a couple of years ago, and he spoke to me afterwards. And I was amazed to hear from him that he had a brother with schizophrenia, hadn't spoken to him for 20 years. It pretty much disowned him. But he felt like through coming to see my show that something opened up in him and that he wanted to make that contact again. So I've gotten so used to talking about schizophrenia, I just figure everybody's talking about it, but it's not so.
Yeah.
And there's still a lot of folks out there who still feel that stigma.
But what a compliment to you as an artist, you know, to have moved somebody who has been blocking that for 20 years. You know, that's good work.
That's what art's all about. Making some changes.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's the hardest thing for you about the show? I mean, are there parts where you just have to sort of brace yourself in order to get through them? Or probably by now you've overcome that.
There actually still are parts that I have to brace myself for. And what I've found out, though, is that it's actually an entryway into an authenticity that I wouldn't have otherwise. And I discovered that through working with, it's a professor who teaches here at UMass, Danny Gaudron, who teaches acting. He also does directing for the Nora Theater and Shakespeare and Company. But I've been working with him. He's been helping me to shape the play and giving me a lot of acting 101, which I never had. Being raised in the poetry slam scene, I never had the formal training. But he's been giving me a tremendous amount of help. And one of the ways that he's been doing that has been to use these very difficult parts of the play as a way for me to find a way in, to go deeper into the character, to go deeper into myself. Because if you do a play 50, 100 times, there's only one way to go, and that's down, that's deeper. And so these points that you mentioned actually serve the play, although
my heart definitely gets pumping.
Scary, yes. I mean, this has got courage in it, you know. I mean, do you think of yourself as being courageous?
I don't, and I always marvel when someone suggests that. I think it's, for me, it's a couple of things. It's there's that part of me that's a ham, that likes to get up in front of folks and do stuff. But it's also a need, and what I didn't realize when I first started writing it, even first started performing it, was how therapeutic a need it is. Mm-hmm. Because I find whenever I go through the play, I essentially, in an hour and a half, go through the entire experience of being raised by my mother and living with her in one way or another through the end of her life. And it's a tremendously powerful experience for me to relive those events, because I feel like each time there's another layer of the onion that comes off. There's another shell that comes off. And it's also a way to honor my mother and my father for the very difficult lives that they were living. I mean, neither of them asked for what they got, but both of them, in their own ways, I think, heroically responded.
What have you gained from all of this, do you think? I mean, both developing the piece, performing it over and over again, I mean, how has it changed you?
It has certainly given me a much, much deeper appreciation for the struggles that my mother and father went through. And by extension, a much greater appreciation for people who, the difficulties that people with mental illness have, must face on a daily basis, and their families. So I think it's given me a kind of empathy that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Sure. Yeah. Michael, thank you again. It has been really wonderful to talk to you.
Well, Barbara, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. You too.
I've really enjoyed this.
Me too. My guest on Commonwealth Journal has been Michael Mack. You can hear more of my conversation with Michael Mack on our website, wumb.org/commonwealthjournal.